You're listening to
The Pulse.
Hey there, Wynn Army Community Hospital and Fort Stewart Hunter Army Airfield. It's Kevin coming at you with another episode of The Pulse, the podcast that keeps our staff and beneficiaries in the know on what's going on here at the hospital and across our clinics. It's June, and June is a month that has a lot of themes. One of those themes is Men's Health Month. And to help spread the word on what men can do to stay healthy, especially concerning mental health, I'm joined by Captain Garrett Boyer, the Deputy of Mental Health here, Behavioral Health here at Wynn Army Community Hospital, and by Matthew Broyles, one of the social workers here as well. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for allowing me to be here.
First, tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you get started in behavioral health, and what's your area of expertise?
So I got started in community-based mental health, and I worked with families and children in the community, did some in-home work and also some therapy, like counseling. Graduate of the UNC School of Social Work. And so I've been working in the field of social work for probably about 15 years now.
15 years, and you just shared with me before we started recording that you just recently started here at Wynn Army Community Hospital.
Correct, yes, I just started in January.
January, you've been here a little bit longer than me. I just started in March, came over from Garrison, so.
Okay.
Both new kids on the block here at Wynn.
Thank you for welcoming me. I was in a seminary for a lot of years and was a seminary student. I thought I was going to be in ministry, and I really enjoyed doing that, and I got many years through seminary school, very close to ordination as a Catholic priest. And towards the end, when we would be in communities and parishes, people would come up to me talking about a lot of things that they were wrestling with and that were on their plate. And so often, I remember just feeling kind of lost, because the stuff that they would come and visit with me about were not spiritual matters primarily. They were behavioral health things. I'm dealing with this problem at home with my kid. My husband and I are wrestling with this problem. Anxiety, depression, all of these different kinds of clinical things that I wasn't really prepared to address or speak about, because we didn't get a lot of that kind of training as a seminary student. And so I just didn't feel like I was equipped to deal with some of the stuff that I was going to be getting into in ministry. So I discerned out of that program and then just went and did work in an office in DC. And I had always felt like there was a lot of overlap between what I was doing as a seminary student, ministry kind of things, and what behavioral health could look like. And so I went to grad school for psychology, really enjoyed it, did well, and there was always this desire to join the military. I just never knew there was a great opportunity for it until I started doing some exploration towards the end of internship, or towards the end of grad school, when we had to apply to internship, finding out that, wow, you can do psychology, behavioral health, in the military for service members. And so to me, that just seemed like a great win. I commissioned as a psychologist, did internship and residency, and then have just really enjoyed working as a behavioral health provider in the context of the military. So some expertise that I've been able to gain has been, of course, in counseling with trauma, anxiety, depression, those sort of things. But a unique opportunity that I've gotten through the military has been to do aeromedical psychology, being able to evaluate aviators and those involved with aircraft, being able to support during residency operational sorts of soldiers, those who are in the special forces community. So great opportunities that as a civilian psychologist, I likely would not have gotten.
So let's launch right into the topic. Why is it important to talk about men's mental health specifically, and is there a stigma surrounding men seeking help for mental health?
Yeah, I would say it's very important to talk about mental health for men. I think, because of the stigma sometimes, I think a lot of times men don't maybe reach out. I think with the stigma, there's a lot of labeling and maybe some, negative attention attached to that. So a lot of times that I think the men don't reach out to get the treatment that they may need. Yeah.
So that sounds like a pretty big challenge for men. I mean, why do we not seek help? Why do we, I guess, suffer in silence?
Sometimes I think that men, more than women, probably internalize the mental health, and maybe they try to fix it themselves rather than go out and seek help and get treatment that they may need that they can make feel better.
So is that one of the biggest challenges that men face in seeking mental health help? I mean, how can we break down that stigma?
I think one of the ways is listening to our friends or our family, and you know, not labeling, like I said, not labeling maybe what they're going through, but being listening to them and trying to be there for them, support them.
Right. So that sounds like, I mean, if you see that someone, a man in your life, is struggling with a mental health issue, to not label it, hey, it looks like you're depressed, or hey, you look like you have anxiety. More like to say, hey, it looks like you're dealing with a little bit of something. Let's talk through it and see what's going on. That's kind of what that sounds like.
Right. Yeah. And even just being aware of some of the things they might be going through. Yeah. I mean, they may be depressed and they may be anxious, but also they may be exhibited in other ways. You know, maybe in their work. Maybe they're not, their work is suffering, or maybe they're having difficulties with their relationships with others. Maybe they're having, maybe they're not connecting well with their family and things like that. And so in those areas, just kind of recognizing those areas that might be suffering, right?
Right, right. So I'm thinking, like, one of those possible symptoms could be like anger. You could be angry and around your family, and it's actually a symptom of something deeper than just anger.
Like, right, the expressed emotion might be angry, right? Like, they might be expressing anger or irritability, but really underneath there's maybe there's depression about maybe they're depressed about something in their lives, or have some depression that they're expressing in a different emotion. And maybe encourage them to reach out and get help, and you know, counselor or somebody that helping personnel can help maybe see what's maybe underneath, right? And get them some help from that.
To get things.
To the root of the problem.
To the root of the problem, mm-hmm. Exactly. Because, you know, the anger is the symptom, but then the actual cause of what's driving that is something deeper. Mm-hmm. And you kind of are touching on it. What are some of the common conditions that affect men, like depression or anxiety? What are some of the things that we face?
Depression, anxiety, you know, oftentimes, like, men may have experienced trauma recently or in their past that they haven't addressed. And sometimes, especially with like trauma, it can, things that have happened, you've experienced in the past, can come up in different ways in your life, right? Mm. Like through extreme irritability, or maybe they're having, intrusive thoughts about the things that happened before, or even nightmares, and they can experience in those ways, and or negative emotions like you've mentioned, anger or depression or those kind of things can even be from the trauma that they've had before.
So what you're saying is, like, if someone's irritable in day-to-day life, that's a manifestation of something that maybe, or it sounds like something that happened in the past that they're still grappling with. That can then manifest as irritability.
Could be, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And yeah, and like, and then maybe, maybe another part of trauma or... it could be like avoidance, trying to avoid some of the things, avoid thinking about the things that happened before, or avoid places that maybe remind them of things that have, the experience that they had, negative experience that they've had.
I think there is still a stigma. I believe that it's gotten better over the last 20 years. I think the more that the spotlight has been put on this, the more the public has become aware of the challenges that not just the military population, but men in our country in general, the challenges that they face, the more receptive I think men, especially younger men, have been to receiving help from behavioral health providers. At the same time, we would be wrong to say that there isn't still, you know, that little bit of stigma that exists. And it's hard, I think, as men to have that self-awareness when to admit, hey, I need some help. I think we've got this sort of Superman part of us that wants to tackle everything ourselves, pull myself up by my bootstraps. And some of the stuff that we have to wrestle with as men, service members, it's hard to deal with some of those things yourself and to go that alone. And it takes a lot to admit, I need to work through this with somebody else. I'm out of my lane here. I need to talk to somebody else. I don't know if you've observed that in your
I would say, like, even maybe a social pressure to, like, to resolve things as, you know, as men. I think there's even that too, and I would agree what you said about it. I feel like it's better now than it was maybe 15 or 20 years ago. It seems like there's much more acceptance, you know, I think, like, within the society as far as, yeah.
I think one thing that's been really interesting about psychology, and if you look at it over the last 100 years, I mean, it's consistently evolved, and especially from, like, the time of Freud and Jung, it was just so zeroed in on what's wrong and the pathology. Well, then we start transitioning to looking at the positive psychology. Where are the virtues? How can people flourish? And then today, like, one thing that I've really enjoyed as a behavioral health provider is looking at, like, performance enhancement, coaching techniques. How can you thrive and really excel in your job even more, using what we know about the human mind, our personalities. People look to industrial organizational psychology for how to make organizations better on a bigger scale. So I think that behavioral health as a field and as a discipline has expanded, grown over the last 100 years, and is continuing to help people get better, addressing the pathology, but also looking for what's good and helping what's already growing to continue to blossom and flourish and grow even better.
Right. And that's something that, you know, I think for men and for, you know, families, like, trying to focus on, like, strength-based mental health and treatment is, I think, is really important.
Interesting. So we're kind of circling around a little bit how you can recognize if a man is showing signs of struggling with mental health. We're kind of touching on that a little bit. How do we show that we're struggling with mental health as men, and how do we manifest different than women? I mean, we're kind of talking about it a little bit, that we might, you know, be more angry and irritable as a man versus what a woman might project.
Men might hold it in and not quite be as expressive, and maybe even try to fix it themselves rather than seeking out help.
Right. Yeah. So men are more, you know, I got this, versus women, they're more expressive and they're more, I mean, it's almost like us as men, we're going at it alone, and we feel we have to go at it alone, versus women are more in a community and in a team environment where women support each other. I mean, it's kind of a generality to say that, but is that kind of true?
Yeah, well, it sounds like, yeah, I mean, maybe a little more individualistic and trying to solve it myself or fix it myself, and rather than, you know, like, seeking out help from others or family, friends, or whatever.
Right. One thing I've observed, too, in the difference between the way men and women may manifest is that I've observed, especially in the context of the military population, a lot of men will try and cope using alcohol as a means to deal with this. Not that women won't drink to excess too, but I just notice it so much more with men when they are externalizing some of their anxiety, frustrations, anger, whatever. Alcohol is just one of those big kind of tools that they use to try and cope, which ultimately usually tends to end up being a less helpful approach
right,
and
a
strategy.
Maladaptive.
Yeah, for sure.
Maladaptive coping strategy, yeah.
Let's take a short break right here, and we'll talk about ways to cope and find resources to help stay mentally healthy as men after the break.
Introducing Q Anywhere, your stress-free prescription pickup solution. Just get in line with your DoD ID, select your pharmacy spot, and we'll text you when your prescription is ready. Text I am here when you're on your way, and we'll have your meds ready for pickup. Quick, efficient, and easy. For refills, call 912-435-6576. Q Anywhere, because life's too short to wait.
And we're back. I'm joined by Captain Boyer and Matthew Broyles. They are two of our gentlemen who work here in the behavioral health section here at Wynn Army Community Hospital. And we're talking about a topic for Men's Health Month about men's mental health and how men struggle with the stigma of seeking help because of wanting to fix things on their own. And that's what we were talking about before the break. And now we're going to talk about the resources and things that families and men can do to seek help and find out what's available here at Wynn. So let's talk about some healthy habits and coping mechanisms first of all. What can men do as far as healthy habits to support our mental well-being?
Well, I know a lot of the young men I work with, I really encourage them, you know, to be active and to try to engage in not only, you know, like, you know, to coping strategies for their mind, but also for their body as well, you know, because I think there's a lot of connection there. So I encourage a lot of the young men I work with to you know, to try to make sure to have regular exercise, balanced diet, and even just, you know, the basic things like that, I think can be really helpful.
You know, a lot of the different disorders that we treat in our clinics have symptoms that are kind of parallel. Depression, anxiety, sometimes can have some of the same symptoms. Some of them include like this desire to isolate, to kind of shut down. People will stop doing things that they used to enjoy, for example. And so activity, activation is always a useful strategy when trying to cope with and wrestle with some of our behavioral health issues. So one of those things is social support. If you've got a network or a community of friends, buddies that you can hang out with, go out with, you know, if I'm out socializing with friends, talking with them, hearing about their lives, sharing a few laughs, enjoying time together, it's hard to be in that environment and in that headspace and still thinking about all the things that are making me sad or all the things that are causing me some angst. And so I've noticed when folks are willing to activate and do stuff, get out of their barracks, get away from their rooms, and actually engage with a group of friends or peers, things tend to go better for them. And then like this piece about stopping doing the things that you have tended to enjoy in the past. If you can engage in some of those hobbies, those recreations, things that you have taken solace in before, or enjoyed before, exercise, like you mentioned, sir, excellent. Woodworking, golfing, whatever. If we can get people to continue to do those things that have brought them pleasure, made them happy, that they've enjoyed, that goes a long way in helping have a healthy coping mechanism to these things that cause us some problems.
Yeah, and it seems like even just, you know, the short time I've been in this environment, I've just noticed how many resources and activities and things like that are available for the soldiers, you know, different sports activities or different, you know, engagements that they can do, like resources that they have access to. So,
I mean, that's very valid. I mean, there is the saying that idle hands, you know, are the devil's playground. So an idle mind or a lonely mind is kind of it sounds like it's the same thing, that it's just an opportunity where if you're sitting in your four walls, just staring at your four walls, that your mind just keeps playing over and over those thoughts that are entrapping.
Yeah, it's that kind of environment is one where the mind can easily start racing, and once the mind gets rolling down that negative trajectory, it's hard to put the brakes on that sometimes.
Right, so having that social circle to support you is important. And then what you were saying, the mind-body connection, I mean, that is absolutely, I mean, the mind's control over the body and then the body's reaction to things. I mean, you can feel pain that isn't even present because of what your mind is telling you. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, that there are just so many ways that the mind and the body interact, right, that have an effect on one's general mood, and not right, just mood, but just interactions with the world.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about like different coping strategies, like, you know, being active and things like that, but also, you know, working with the men working with a therapist can also discuss, you talked about the connection between the mind and the body, and explore like cognitive coping strategies that we have, like using our mind and to help to modify some unhelpful thoughts that we might have that are causing us to suffer, feel more depression or anxiety or whatever it is.
Well, right, that mind-body connection is absolutely huge in behavioral health. And I spend a lot of times with my patients just coaching and educating about how significant it is that behavioral health problems aren't solely behavioral. We're dealing with our bodies. Our physiology is always involved when we're talking about behavioral health. So if you take, for example, PTSD, it's a huge topic around military installations because a lot of our service members have been in situations where they're experiencing that post-traumatic stress, and then sometimes it gets into that disordered category. But when you're talking about PTSD, yeah, it's a mind thing, but think about the behavioral activation piece that comes with it as well. People talk about these traumatic experiences being like this flashbulb moment. And when people have post-traumatic stress, what they'll notice a lot of times is that they'll be in situations where they'll feel like their heart starts racing. Perhaps their hands will get cold and clammy. Then all of a sudden they start maybe feeling a little bit shaky or panicky. Those are physiological responses that are being cued because of the mind going somewhere, or you hear a sound, or you see trash on the side of the street, or something takes you back to some scene or event that happened, and the body is what gets activated. Same thing with anxiety or other kinds of stressors. You know, the neurological piece, the mind, the brain, the physiology all goes together. I just had an example of this the other day of how quickly it is that the brain and body works without me even really being aware of it. I was jogging along the path here on Post. I had my headphones on. I was listening to music, minding my own business, and out of the corner of my eye, I didn't even really see it, but I could kind of sense that it was there. It was just a squirrel running off into the trees. Not anything threatening, but I jumped, and all of a sudden it's like, that flight or fight sort of mechanism was automatically cued in the brain. And even before my mind could process what it was, you know, my body started reacting and adjusting to whatever that perceived threat was. It was just a squirrel. But I think it was just for me, I was like, wow, yeah, that brain-body connection just, it works whether you're dealing with a squirrel on a running path, or if you are really in the midst of an austere environment. And then once you have an experience, say like an austere environment, and you have that traumatic stress, it takes a while for the body to adapt to that. And so those sort of techniques that we have downrange or when we're in those traumatic situations that keep us safe, because you want to be really attentive and alert to stressors in those sort of environments, they're less helpful when you're home, when you're in a mall, when you're at the movie theater, when you're out to eat with your family. But the brain and body connection, they go hand in hand. And then when you're dealing with stressors, anxiety, trauma, it takes a while to get the brain and body in sync in the right way.
So what are some ways to build, I mean, that emotional intelligence to recognize cognitively, to take that cognitive pause, to recognize, hey, my body's reacting, let me separate my mind from my body to allow my body to process what it's processing, but to recognize that that's what's going on and to take back that cognitive step and to come down. What are some coping mechanisms we can use to manage stress and difficult emotions, or reacting to a squirrel out of the corner of the eye and thinking it's something dangerous?
Yeah, and I feel like what you're kind of describing, like being aware of it, right? Like being mindful, like mindfulness techniques can be really helpful to be able to observe what's going on, right? Observe that it's a squirrel. Maybe describe your situation and not be judgmental about the situation, but kind of like recognize what's going on and being very mindful. So mindfulness techniques can be really helpful.
Absolutely. I think having the awareness of what you're feeling and experiencing and accepting it for what it is at that time is very important. Because I think a lot of folks, especially men, we can beat ourselves up and think, I have to be Superman. I have to be this ubermensch. I have to be able to deal with this. Mm-hmm. I got to be Mr. Tough Guy. I mean, I think a lot of men deal with that. And then the military, too, is a culture where we kind of fuel that fire. When the reality is that there are no Supermen. And we all have vulnerabilities, and we all have weaknesses, and stuff that we go through, anybody in our shoes that went through the same thing would probably have similar reactions to what we are having. And so I think being aware of what I'm feeling and how I'm feeling it, and getting to that point where I can accept that and be okay with that. I'm feeling this, and right now this is okay. Maybe I want to make some adjustments and change things going forward, but this is where I'm at right now. Okay, now, where do I go from here? So that attentiveness to how we're feeling and that acceptance for where we're at right now.
And, I think, and being like non-judgmental, right? Like accepting like, okay, yeah, I'm going through this. It's difficult, but not beating yourself up, like you said, not judging yourself and allowing yourself to be vulnerable.
And then as far as like building that emotional intelligence, building those resilience skills, I think one thing that is very helpful and important is being able to communicate about this with others, be it a therapist or a counselor, be it your buddies when you're hanging out. It's very useful to be able to say, hey, this happened. I experienced this. This is what I felt. What do you think? Does that seem normal? A lot of times the judgments that we have in our head about the things we experience and the things that we feel are not necessarily grounded in the reality of the situation. And so we may be looking at our experiences or looking at our situation with a tinted lens, and it can be very helpful to get the input of somebody else who can help us get a perspective that's more grounded in the reality. So being able to communicate about what's going on for ourselves, and then being able to receive and accept that feedback that others can offer and give.
So, yeah, we can be our own harshest critics is what that's amounting to, that we are sometimes very much in our own thoughts, thinking that no one else is experiencing this, I'm in this alone, and I need to be that Superman and fix this on my own.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So to help someone, a man, come in, I mean, what therapies and resources, what do we have here at Wynn Army Community Hospital to help? And what tips would you give for someone who's considering, he's teetering. Well, teetering isn't the right word, because he's on the cusp of a revelation that, yes, I'm going to go get help. What's that little nudge to push him to come here, to get him to get the help that he needs to be the better person that he can be?
Well, what would you say if you're talking about that nudge? I'll talk about what we offer at Wynn Community Hospital. What do you think about that nudge?
I think it's important, like you talked about previously, just having like a supportive network. Sometimes like Having other family or friends can be that nudge. Sometimes, you know, it might be somebody in your command or somebody in your, you know, in your field. I mean, you never know, like, what you could be is like a supervisor or command or whatever can be really helpful. And you know, like we talked about before, like the stigma, not having that stigma about it, trying to help your other soldiers that you're in command of, or maybe it can be the nudge that you need. And sometimes, you know, it might be internal, that, you know, you just kind of realize that, you know what, I'm suffering in these areas, work, my family, my relationship, or whatever. I think it's time that I get some help.
You know, when you're trying to be attentive to that kind of nagging, like, is this something I got to go through with? And you're feeling that nudge, be it from command or family, or you yourself are just kind of wrestling. I would encourage folks, and I have thought about this myself, one of the Army values is personal courage. And it takes a lot to take that step to go to a counselor, a therapist, somebody, and be vulnerable. Because let's face it, as guys, we're not so good at showing that vulnerability naturally. And it takes some personal courage, especially knowing that when you take that step, it may very well result in me having to change the way I think, change some things that I do, change the way that I approach my day to day. And that takes some real courage. Now, fortunately, at Wynn Army Community Hospital, there are resources to help folks in this journey, and especially our men, soldiers, our men who are dependents of family members who are soldiers, and we work with everybody. But we've got our embedded behavioral health clinics, which serve the brigades. We have our multi-D clinic, CAF Biz, FAP. And so there are these resources that are available for folks. We have an intensive outpatient treatment program, which is very helpful and useful for those who need that level of care. We have our prescribing providers. Sometimes pharmacological therapy is a useful intervention. And so, absolutely, we've got resources right here at Fort Stewart in our clinics that can help address this. Furthermore, we have the military family life consultants. We have the chaplains. There is our chain of command, our battle buddies. There are places that we can turn to as guys if we're serious about getting some help.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Absolutely. So what can we do as men to help each other out? How can we look out for each other and our mental health?
I think one thing that's important, and the Army has stressed this over the past several years, is this people-first approach. The mission is important, of course. The mission is accomplished with people. And so this people-first approach, and a lot of times what that looks like is active listening, leading with empathy. You know, if you follow some of these social media resources out there on military life and military experience, the soldiers that really get highlighted as making a difference are the ones that can lead with empathy, who really do actively listen, put themselves in somebody else's shoes. I think as men, as service members, this is a great thing that we can do to support one another, not trying to one-up, oh, well, you had this happen, well, guess what happened to me? No, to really listen, to really exercise that muscle of empathy, being understanding about where a person is at, what they've gone through. So the listening piece, the empathy piece, to me that's huge. And I've noticed service members respond so well when they've got a battle buddy, a therapist, a friend, somebody that can do that for them.
Right. I would also say, like, maybe look through the labels. Try not to, like look through, like, depression or anxiety or PTSD, or look, you know, to try to look past those kind of labels and look in at it as, you know, something that you need help with. and not and to try to go about it that way.
Yeah, something along the lines of, I'm just not feeling as me can feel.
Right.
I'm feeling a little off.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what do you see as the future for men's health? Where do you see men's health and mental health for men going?
I mean, I would agree with what you said before. I feel like there's more awareness now about mental health. And, you know, I feel like there's more of a willingness to access mental health, I feel like, than maybe in the past. You know, and I think that you had talked about the mind-body connection, and I think that's really important. People are understanding that, you know, that this, you know, my mental health is also part of my physical health. You know, it's part of being a healthy person, not different categories, right? So,
I mean, look at where we've been. And look where we are now. I alluded earlier to the history of the development of the field of behavioral health and how we've, over the years, incorporated positive psychology, strengths and virtues, looking to the influence of behavioral health and psychology's influence for performance enhancement and development of organizations on a large scale. So look where we had come from and where we're at now, and then where are we going? It's only going to get better, especially as we continue to unpack some of the philosophies and thoughts about behavioral health. And technology is an important piece of this puzzle. I mean, look at brain health. We've learned more about the human brain in the last 10 years than we had known in the last 10,000 years. As technology continues to develop and our ability to understand the body-brain connection, how anatomy plays into all of this, it's huge and can't be underestimated. Additionally, with the genesis, which is continuing to unfold, of AI, how is that going to impact behavioral health and therapy? I just read a paper talking about the efficacy that some of this technology can have and how useful it can be. So, right, I think we are at the door of a great palace when we talk about mental health, behavioral health, and I'm excited to check out all the rooms as we go forward on this journey through the tour of behavioral health coming ahead.
Very cool. So, if you had to dispel one specific myth or misconception about men's mental health, one myth only, what is that myth that you would want to dispel?
Nobody knows what I'm going through. I'm going through this alone. Nobody else feels the way I feel. I hear that all the time. Men just have a hard time, I think, recognizing or appreciating that what they're going through, somebody else is probably going through something similar, and that is a big myth. A lot of people know what you're going through, and a therapist, even though I may not have gone through exactly what you're going through, I can empathize with you. I can accompany you on this journey. I can be there to support you. You're not going it alone.
Yeah, and I was thinking, you know, that big myth is it's not going to help. It's not going to matter anyways. Whether I do it or not, I'm still going to have the same problems. I'm still going to have the same issues. So it's not going to be that helpful anyways. So why waste my time?
Well, there you have it. I mean, that's pretty much it in a nutshell for men. We aren't alone. Someone else has suffered what we have suffered, if we're suffering through something. And any action, any step you take to help yourself is going to help. So to all the men out there listening, if you're struggling, dealing with an issue of mental health, behavioral health, there are resources here at Wynn Army Community Hospital to help you. And you're not going at it alone, and you don't have to be that person that's trying to fix it on your own. There are other people here that have that empathy that can go along in that journey. And then together we can walk through that palace of, you know, new ways to explore solving the challenges that face us internally, behaviorally, that we can work on to be the better me that we all deserve to be. But that's about all the time we have for this episode of The Pulse. Gentlemen, Captain Boyer, Mr. Broyles, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Great to be here today. Yep.
So that was just a little bit of a discussion about one particular topic for men's health, which is this month in June. And don't treat June as men's health month exclusively, even though it is. Every month can be men's health month. So folks, thanks for listening. And this is Kevin, and I'll catch you on the flip side.